All right, we now have our quorum, so I'm going to call the order once John gets back from upstairs. He just went up there for just a sec. You're sorry? Okay. Then I am going to call our meeting to order. We're going to start off with our public comment period. Is there anybody signed up for public comment? Anybody? Public comment? Seeing none. We're going to move on to approval of the agenda and the meeting minutes. We're just going to put this all into one agenda item. We're going to move this by unanimous consent. So are there any objections to approval of the minutes in the agenda? Seeing none. We're going to move directly on to a discussion with Tom Harrington, Director of Long Range Planning here at Metro, about Momentum. Welcome.
Tom Harrington, Director of Long Range Planning in the Metro Office of Planning. And I think we last came before the RAC in the fall to gather input on our Momentum strategic plan. Tonight we're going to show you a little bit about how that input's been used. I'll give an overview of the draft strategic plan. And I think in particular we want to talk and hear from you about sort of how we can work together to move this plan ahead as we particularly go forward with going back to the board this month, but also in the months to come, what sort of the next steps are. And just a little background, particularly in the last couple of years, our board has really refocused on governance, and sort of one of the key issues there was the need for a strategic plan for the agency. So after many work sessions with them, staff did a draft, really with a lot of input in the fall, and then delivered a draft to the board in January. And so we've been getting more input on that, and that's really where we're at today. So when I started, first, talk a little bit about the outreach. As I said, we started in the fall, and really the importance of outreach can't be overstated. In terms of reaching out to our customers, talking to stakeholders, the business community, public stewards. It was very important to gather as much input as possible, so we had a staff draft that was responsive to our stakeholders. And we did a combination of traditional methods of going out and speaking with groups and doing presentations, and then we also had a strong online presence with the Mind Mixer tool, and with surveys and other ways to get input on basically what the public and stakeholders view as priorities for improving Metro. So some of the key themes that we heard, first is just kind of wide consensus that Metro is critical to the region's future. I think that was a point we didn't have to spend a lot of time talking about. People got that part of it. They really value what we've been doing in terms of rebuilding the infrastructure of the system, and they said that has to keep happening. We have to have a system that's in a good state, in a state of good repair. Crowding was an issue that both on rail and bus was raised. They feel it's important to focus on crowding, and they think it does affect people's experience in riding both trains and buses. Customer information was a recurring theme as well, and for a lot of folks that has a big impact on how they feel about their trip, and that's both information beforehand in terms of knowledge about planning a trip, knowing where to go to get on a trip, but also during the ride, information about what's happening, particularly during incidents, for all things we heard loud and clear from multiple stakeholders. And we're going to come back to some of these kind of key themes we heard and sort of how they're addressed in the plan. Stable funding is certainly something that we wanted to raise, and really a key theme and momentum is the need, in order to do everything we wanted to do, the importance of having stable funding. And then sort of the first thing I skipped over was make those small plans for Metro. And here the idea was everyone said, we want you to fix the smaller things, we want you to address the things you can do to improve service today. But we recognize with a growing region that we have to think about bigger picture items too. And so those were also a key part of our discussion. Okay. So in the momentum framework, and I did hand out an executive summary, it's also online as well. But on, just kind of orient you that on page two of the plan has a strategic framework which essentially takes the vision, mission, and goals that our board of directors developed and adopted in the fall, and then adds another layer below it, which we're calling strategies. And that's really what I'm going to kind of go through today, kind of present the strategies, which take the four high-level goals that the board developed and breaks them down into sort of smaller strategic actions that we can be focused on that then we'll implement as an agency through our business planning process. And so I'm going to start with goal one, which is our goal to build and maintain a premier safety culture and system. So first goal was the commitment that Metro has to be safe. Metro is safe today, and that we'll create a safer and more secure transit experience for customers and employees. Again, that builds on things that were already happening here, but we just, again, emphasize that every time we go out and talk to our stakeholders about the importance of safety to everything we do here. Breaking it down, though, into what that means for us with strategies, first being the importance of having, you know, a well-maintained system, continue the rebuilding effort, and in the short term, that's implementing all of the NTSB recommendations on how we can improve safety is the number one thing there on strategies. The second is creating a shared climate of safety. So this is things like mitigating crime through station upgrades and lighting, other safety improvements that we can make so that as people move through the system, whether it be trains or buses, they feel safe and we have an environment that supports them there. Expected the unexpected is preparing really for incidents. And again, we've done a lot in that area, but there can be more that we do in terms of enhancing emergency protocols, protecting our systems, and the transit system against both natural and man-made incidents, and really having communication and feedback loops to prevent accidents. And the last one, preparing for extreme weather, is really more dealing with natural incidents. It's really how can we make the system safer, recognizing potential risks that could be related to the types of storms we saw, say, in New York City in the fall. That's more of a longer-term strategic issue for us that we feel that we need to address to sort of harden the system for future. Moving on, goal two, meeting or exceeding customer expectations by delivering quality service is the goal. So we heard loud and clear, I mentioned information already, but from customers about the need to have the ability to basically plan, pay, and ride in a way that's intuitive and easy for the customer. And really, things like on-time performance, reliability, are all clearly very important to folks. What that means for us, and we have two or three strategies here that kind of hit on common themes here. And the first, becoming a self-service system, really gets at a system where you can get through the system, you can pay, you can go down, wait for a train, there's good information, wayfinding, without having to ask someone. And that really gets at both focusing on the customer, but then also making it easy to plan, pay, and ride. In other words, if the system is done in a way where it's intuitive, where there's good information, and where it's very easy to do fare payment, that should be something that happens automatically. But we're looking, basically, if that's a strategy, then what are the things we need to do, both technologically and with our personnel to basically improve the experience. fixing it first and fast is, again, getting at the infrastructure and making sure that we can stay reliable when we have equipment that's working and fully functioning and is reliable. Then I guess finally on the make it easy to play to plan, pay, and ride. We talked about information, fare payment, which is again something we heard from, particularly from visitor assistance people don't ride every day. That's an issue that was raised frequently. And then the last part of that would be the customer environment, the stops, shelters, stations, in terms of lighting, having them be easy to navigate, and so forth, were all things that we heard from our customers, and we think are key strategies. Okay, next goal three, is improving regional mobility and connected communities. And again, this recognizes our role in the region and sort of how we support that. When the system was designed, it was really designed to help bring commuters into downtown Washington. We're in a changing region, but a growing region with multiple downtowns, multiple activity centers. And so that changes the way sort of folks ride the system. It also changes how we can help support growth in the region. And so certainly in a lot of our discussions in the fall, we talked about how we support the regional economy through transit-oriented development. And then basically how both the transit system needs to have good access and the capacity to grow. And so in terms of key strategies here, we recognize that we are also the one regional transit operator with many operators around the region. Regardless of how you start or end a trip, often Metro is a key backbone of that system. And you know, it's a place people may go for information about a trip. It may be that you start on a local bus operator, but you transfer to Metro or Metro Bus. So we have a key role in terms of making sure all those systems work well together and are integrated. The next strategy, maximizing what we have, recognizes that we've got a robust system, but we should look for ways to get more capacity out of what we've got today on both the rail and the bus system. Enhancing access means access for all, but it also means looking particularly as the region grows for ways to make it easier to get trains and buses, and often that means improving the pedestrian environment. It looks at how transit stations and stops interface with land uses around them, and so that's a key issue as we look to the future. We also, as we talk about a growing region, know that the system is going to need to grow to keep up with increasing demands, and so the regional transit system plan is a parallel effort we're working on to look at a long-range expansion plan for the system, and so that's a key strategy in terms of how we can help support regional mobility. Last part on economic competitiveness looks at how we support development in the region, which is a key need in the future. Goal four, ensuring financial stability, investing in our people and assets. Here the focus is both on supporting the system through new sources of predictable funding. That means us working with our partners to look at ensuring adequate funding to keep up with both maintaining the system and growing, which we'll come back on that one. Investing in the long term is really looking at how we invest with our capital dollars to make sure that we have investments that minimize operating costs in the long term, but also investing in things that help us address our longer-term needs, such as growth. Increasing efficiency and lowering costs is how basically Metro functions with our key cost drivers, making sure that we do everything as efficiently as possible, improving business processes, using technology wherever possible to save in operating dollars. Being green is a key strategy for us, not only in terms of reduction of natural resources, environmental impact, but as one of the largest users of energy in the region, it both affects the region, but also saves us money in the long term. be more sustainable. So it's a key strategy for the future. And then finally, looking at our human resources, recruiting and keeping the best staff here is a key strategy. Includes training, career development, and then basically supporting employees who help deliver the service that we need to deliver. Momentum is a 10-year strategic plan. The emphasis is on both a strategic framework, but also the key projects that we need in the next 10 years to get us where we need to be. So we've developed a 2025 priority list, and really I'm going to walk through some of these projects. We think these are the key priorities over the next 10 years for capital investment to get the system to where it needs to be. And really, again, the recurring theme I mentioned earlier was maximizing what we have. So on the rail side, one way that we can add significant capacity is by running longer trains, fully utilizing our 600-foot platforms. We're running 8-car trains in the rush periods. By adding longer trains, all 8-car trains, and adding some more rail service, we have the ability to actually add 35% more capacity in the peak hour. So there's still a lot of room there in terms of adding more capacity to the system just by running longer and more frequent train service. However, at key points in the system, particularly crossing the rivers into downtown, we are already pretty much at train capacity. So there are certain spots in the system where we're already pretty limited, and so all we can do is run some longer trains to add more capacity. We recognize that if we add more train capacity, it's critical to add capacity to key stations in the core, many of which are already experiencing crowded conditions. And certainly if we're going to grow in terms of more ridership, addressing key stations with the highest ridership, particularly transfers between lines, is definitely a priority for the next 10 years. Pocket tracks and crossovers are really some of the improvements we think we can make to improve efficiency, but also give us flexibility. It's a critical need also as we look at track work and the ability to go around incidents. And so something we use today, but it's an issue where we think there are a few areas where we maybe will add some more flexibility. In the case of a pocket track, particularly discussed when we talked about the Silver Line needing to go to Largo and looking for areas where potentially with a pocket track there may be opportunities to turn back some trains. We talked about the importance of information, and we know that investing in a new communication system will help us deliver the kind of information customers need. There's been some discussion of that in our FY14 budget in terms of outlining what that would be, but it would include both information the customer would see as well as some of the back-end systems that would both improve the kind of information that's available on the information displays on platforms, potentially the information you would get inside trains and buses in real time, and it would include, as I said, some of the back-end information that we use to communicate between different systems. The Metro Bus Priority Corridor Network has been a major initiative for the last 5 years, and while we've gotten very far in planning the corridor improvements and implementing a number of the service enhancements, what's lagged behind that is some of the capital improvements in terms of particularly running way priority and some of the customer facilities. We think it's a key priority for the agency to continue to implement that and fully implement by 2025 all the improvements in the priority corridor bus network. We also need to prepare for growth on the bus system by basically expanding our bus fleet, both to keep up with the needs of ridership growth, but also recognizing the impact that traffic congestion has on our ability to provide more service. And so the priority corridor bus network and expanding the bus fleet go together to deliver the bus service we need. There's one last project in the middle here, which is a new Blue Line connection, and that recognizes, some of the constraints we have in the system, in particular with the Silver Line coming into Roslyn, having 3 lines go through Roslyn into the downtown core. There's currently a feasibility study underway looking at ways that we potentially could add some more Blue Line service between in the Roslyn Pentagon segment, and in particular could involve adding a second set of platforms at Roslyn to handle Blue Line trains. And so that's an area we think it's a priority to maintain the service levels that we think we need, and so we've listed that in our 2025 list of priorities. Next slide outlines sort of the longer term ideas, and again, these are ones that we've been developing as part of a long-range regional transit plan. While they are in our draft plan, it was particularly to paint a vision for where the system's headed to help inform the 10-year priorities. But I'd reiterate that the emphasis of the Momentum strategic plan is really on the 10-year priorities. And so these are provided more to give you a sense of the types of things we're looking at as part of the regional transit plan. But that includes ways that we're going to have to add more service. And so once we've run longer trains, that is going to involve actually adding new lines. And so in this regional planning effort, we are looking at places where either new rail lines, but also new bus, streetcar, light rail lines are warranted or needed across the region, some of which would be operated by Metro, some would be by other operators. And we're looking at how all the pieces fit together, particularly places where different jurisdictions are developing their lines independently, and we're looking at areas where perhaps regional connections would help the network work better together. Again, I think the key action here is us continuing to develop this regional transit plan that's going to be coming out after Momentum and done in parallel, but we think it's important to keep looking towards the future to ensure that we have the right priorities for the next 10 years. Okay, last slide here. Just to give a sense of the types of costs we're talking about, currently our capital improvement program is under $1 billion, about $900 million a year. With projections in terms of what we need to just maintain the system, we're saying the first priority is maintaining the system and maintaining the funding levels we have for our state of good repair needs. So the capacity enhancements we've talked about, we estimate over the next 12 years would be about $500 million a year more in order to do everything that we've talked about in the 2025 priority list. If we were to develop this extensive expansion program for the whole region, including a lot of the expansion projects, as you can see, it would be a significant amount of money more, $700 million or more over a much longer time period. So, again, this was information we provided the board in January to give them a sense of what we're talking about in terms of funding needs. And, of course, as we talk with our funding partners about what we need and what's available, we're going to come back to some of this information next. And then the key thing here is endorsement. And again, we want to hear from you. We've been talking to our stakeholders. Do we have the right priorities for the next 10 years? And again, it's both the strategies we talked about as well as those projects for 2025. And we want to basically emphasize by endorsing the plan for supporting our efforts in terms of safety, maximizing the capacity of the system, focusing on customer information, and making basically the traveler experience, you know, more intuitive and easier for the customer, I think are all key themes that we have touched on tonight. That's my presentation. I'll take questions. I think we particularly want to hear where the places are that you think we should emphasize as we talk about this with stakeholders, but also you know, where are the elements that we can work with you, I think, on advancing implementation. Thank you.
Thank you. Just to clarify, first of all, I believe you're looking for an official RAC endorsement of this plan tonight. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So that's sort of the motion on the table, as it were. I think we're just going to do what we did last time and go around the bend here. And if everybody can just ask one question, then if we have time, we're going to go back around, and then we can sort of debate the motion on the floor, as it were. So, Carol, you want to start us off?
Yes. Yes, I would like to see Metro take a stronger position in terms of moving, position itself more aggressively in terms of an economic driver of the region. And I'm specifically looking at the language You have the language that says something about support.
Yeah, I think in goal three, there was some discussion about our support for the regional economy.
Right. And I think that Metro is in a position, because it has 11,000 employees, to be a major economic engine. And I would like to see more of a public commitment to recruiting and enhancing jobs in the area, training programs at the technical and administrative and professional level. In other words, a stronger statement about its power as an economic driver of the region.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Patrick?
Thank you. Great. Thank you very much. I just turned myself off. Thank you very much. On the accessibility area, two areas that I see that I think are useful in the short term, but also equally useful in the long term, when it comes to things like lighting, looking at not only increasing lighting the way that we're working towards today, but looking at it long term to see what we can do to make sure that, as far as a policy is concerned, with the construction of new stations, that things like lighting are enhanced, and we don't have to debate it station by station, that it's done sort of at a global level as far as updating those sorts of standards. The other thing that I think would be important would be using that same kind of an argument, looking at the way the bus stops are built, and leveraging whatever we can leverage, because I know so much of that is jurisdictional, to make sure that they're upgraded, accessible, and then kept that way, and we don't have various standards from region to region to region.
Thank you. Before we get to you, I am remiss in not allowing the public comment period to go by. Are there any comments from the public before we go on? Yes.
Tom, thanks for coming out tonight. I've heard Sean give the presentation as well, and it's an excellent plan. But specifically on the issue of passenger information and sort of transit technology in general, transit authorities have historically been beholden to very large vendors for very expensive software packages to drive passenger information systems. And there are a handful of sort of leading-edge transit authorities that have taken a different tack. TriMet, for example, when they wanted to replace their trip planner, launched a research project which led to the development of the open source package Open Trip Planner, which is now considered state of the art. It does things that Google Transit doesn't do. It does a lot of things that Trapeze certainly doesn't do. And it's been deployed around the world. And that was simply a research project that they launched. It's now replaced their proprietary trip planner. Similarly, MTA New York City Transit, when they wanted to implement an AVL system, decided, again, to launch a research project, a pilot, which led to the development of actually a package of enhancements for an open source project originally launched in Seattle, one bus away. This turned into MTA Bus Time, a project which they say resulted in a 70% cost savings over the commercial alternative, which would have been clever. WMATA can do a lot to partner with the open data community, leverage open source solutions. Basically, the things that, and Sean went into this in more detail, I know you didn't cover, you know, some of the finer points of what the whole plan, pay, and ride ecosystem looks like, but these are all things that can be done today with technologies that already exist. I mean, the fact of the matter is that some of this could be deployed in a week. Literally a week, and it doesn't involve signing a single check. The simple issue is lack of data, lack of quality data, and then, as I said, the need to engage the development community that already exists. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members of the public want to comment? Okay, seeing none. Patrick, number two.
As I look at this, and thank you very much for joining us tonight, as I look at this, I see a lot of things, and I guess as a side note here, I will mention that communications in general tends to be more of a service provider than an expertise area in its own field. You know, communicators are seen as helping and buttressing other efforts, not necessarily as
goals and objectives in and of themselves. But what I don't see in any of these goals is the word communicate or communication. I do see them in Metro 2025. You know, we talked about upgrading our communications infrastructure, but what I'm curious about is there an effort to provide Metro Communications with the support they need to talk to riders, talk to users about the designs behind each of these steps, the progress on each of these steps? You know, are we going to be leaving it to Metro Communications to communicate these things on a piecemeal basis, or is there really an effort to say, hey, look, this is what we're doing, this is where we are in the process, and this is where we're going? You know, I see communications infrastructure there, and that's wonderful. But what I'm curious about is, you know, I think there is an effort to understand when things don't go well, if the effort is reciprocal, if riders feel that Metro is attempting to explain these things and say, hey, look, this is the problem. Is there a structural effort to that end? It's in here somewhere.
Yeah, and this is a pretty high level, obviously, strategic plan. I think we're emphasizing our priorities. I think some of the details, particularly about what we're doing in the short term, are in our departmental business plans. And so some of the real short term stuff we're doing on that is going to be in there. But there's the technology, and then there's clearly a training component, particularly for our frontline employees, that's part of it too. Just one clarification, were you referring to communication just in general to the agency, or were you specifically talking about the customer facing communication system?
No, I'm not talking about this communication system in terms of, you know, messages and wayfinding, that type of thing. I'm just talking about kind of organizational communication of, for example, the thing that jumped out at me is, you know, the focus on the customer becoming a self-service system. Those type of things that are very customer expectation driven, there's going to need to be a component of making sure that we've got people on the ground that can explain this stuff. And maybe that's where the training comes in, that type of thing. I'm wondering if there is a specific bullet point or if it's a kind of a larger overall effort that you're talking about.
Yeah, I think particularly in some of the actions we have, I think we get at that point that it's both of those things, both the technology side but also the people side of it, and make sure particularly our employees have the information in real time as well, and that may be the connection between the technology and the staff, is making sure that in real time our frontline employees have accurate information that they can share with customers.
Thanks so much for your presentation. I just have a really quick question. Just as a rider and a member of the public, I noticed that Metro has lots of plans. And what's confusing for me is you have Region Forward, you have Metro Forward, you have the Regional Transit System Plan, Metro 2040, Metro 2025. What is the plan that the general public needs to know? Is the mission that includes the vision mission for Metro, the milestones, the metrics, the strategic objectives that you plan to implement over the next few years? So it's just really, really confusing. And the second part to my question is, how often does Metro plan to update and refresh momentum? You said it was a 10-year plan, but I will assume that you will update every 2 to 3 years.
Well, the business plans are going to be updated really almost annually as we're looking. And we kind of have a three-year look ahead of what each department's doing. That's a more regular update. Our last sort of agency adopted strategic plan was 10 years ago. We certainly, I think, are going to probably take a look at that in, you know, shorter time frame than that. Probably not annually, but certainly every few years we revisit and so forth. But coming back to your, I guess, your first point, in terms of a lot of plans floating out there, which ones? Again, I think the momentum, and this is a key thing we want to make sure everyone gets, is that sort of 10-year horizon in terms of what the agency's priorities are. And so, again, that's kind of our 2025 priority list. Region Forward, which is a council government's plan, is really looking at long-term how the region could grow, and it's a vision for the growth and development of the region that envisions walkable, livable communities that are focused on activity centers around the region. So that's an important sort of background in terms of if that's, and the region's local governments have endorsed that vision, as that's where growth in the region should go. Our effort on developing a 2040 transit network is saying, what's the transit network we're going to need to support that vision for where the future is going? And then really this 10-year momentum strategic plan is saying, what do we need to be doing right now to get us there? And before we can talk about expanding the system, a key theme here is we've got to focus on the core capacity, maximizing what we have, adding bus and train service to keep up with growth. These things are critical to even get to that 2040 vision. So, anyway, momentum is a 10-year look ahead. And again, I think that's what I'm trying to keep folks, you know, focused on. Thanks for the comments.
Thanks. Fred?
It is a draft, and thanks for the comment.
The second piece is great that you have like a long-term vision, but you know, like the Council of Government or the TPD, they have a constrained long-range plan. Is there something that you can tell us about in this whole plan that you have? What's funding actually available for, and what is like there's no funding for? Because I mean, kind of my view of Metro funding. Look at the region and all the other things people have. It's Metro, it's like a flat hole, it sucks up all the money, and then there's no money for anything else. So what is actually money available to do?
The constrained long-range plan at the Council of Governments, TPP, are the list of projects the region thinks there's funding that's reasonably expected. So as far as transit expansion for Metro, Silver Line is in the CLRP, and that's moving ahead now into almost done with phase one, and then phase two coming soon in construction. Beyond that, what Metro does have in there is some money for maintenance, but not the full amount that we requested. And then beyond that, there's actually no money for any capacity expansion in the constrained long-range plan. There are transit projects, around $7 billion worth of transit projects for things like the Purple Line, DC Streetcar, Columbia Pike Streetcar, Crystal City Joint Yard. Those are the expansion projects that are in the CLRP right now. But a key theme for us with Momentum 2025 is those are all good projects. They're going to help attract more transit riders. But we have to make sure that we maximize and add capacity to the core of the system, particularly for trains and buses, where we basically have overcrowding. Otherwise, as we expand and bring more people to the system, you know, we're going to exacerbate problems. So we think that's a key priority for the region is funding, maximizing the capacity by funding 8-car trains and the priority corridor network are kind of key themes there. So it's a good point in terms of raising it, and it's certainly something that we want to make sure that we get that into the CLRP, funding for the capacity enhancement.
Hi, thank you for being here. One of the things that struck me when looking at your goals was the fact that the 100% 8-car trains is on this 2025 time frame. I certainly hope Blue Line will be on a faster track than that, for one. And then the other thing would be the escalators and elevators. Where do you address that in your strategic plan? Because I certainly hope that somebody's looking at a way to come up with something that will give you escalators and elevators that work consistently. Thank you.
And again, I think we're at a high level where we say, you know, infrastructure should be reliable and fix it first and fast. As we dive down into some of the detailed actions, clearly elevator and escalator reliability is a key action.
Debbie?
Thank you, Tom, for coming in. I want to ask you to repeat, what is the issue if you have 8 cars running during rush hour, what would be the impact? Can you explain that again? I'm not getting that clearly yet.
The impact in terms of benefits specifically? Okay. Sure. Well, right now we run a mixture of 6-car and 8-car trains during rush periods. And even though our platforms are long enough that we can actually handle an 8-car train, we don't have enough rail cars to run all 8-car trains in the rush hour. And that also means we need power upgrades and we need storage and maintenance to expand the rail fleet. So we think that by investing in those things, by being able to run all 8-car trains, we're going to add a lot of capacity pretty you know, cost effectively. And so that's why it's a key priority.
Thank you. Alex?
Hi, thanks for coming in today. first of all, I'm kind of a dorky guy, but these kinds of things I think are actually one of the things that Metro is doing really well. These plans, when I hear them and when people talk about them, they're kind of exciting and it's good. So credit to you guys for coming up with these plans. That said, I think, you know, a lot of government entities and Metro same way, they're really good at these plans, but really it's about the implementation of the plans that is the critical aspect. And to that end, I think that there are two things that, in my opinion, and perhaps you can respond to this, are things that are really the critical aspects moving forward. The first is, I think we need to start thinking big in terms of what we're going to do. These aren't little changes that are going to make the difference. And one thing that I like about momentum is that it's forcing us into the future. It's coming, and in order to catch up, we've got to push ourselves to think big. One of the things that you pointed out that I thought was an interesting idea along those lines was running new train, building a second station at Roslyn. That's the kind of thing that when I hear it, it's like, yeah, we've got to do it. Why? Because everybody knows the Silver Line's going to cause a huge problem. Everybody knows it. We know it. You know it. And yet, we're sort of sitting around twiddling our thumbs, hoping that it'll work itself out. Nope, we've got to think big, make good plans, and come up with innovative, good ideas to solve these problems, because they're coming. The second issue is there's a lot of things that we can do, and I hope that it's more in the implementation plans that of ways that we can implement these goals without costing a lot of money. One thing that I see in Metro that's a huge problem, for example, is a lack of, say, professionalism among station staff. You know, training, keeping up morale among people who are working at the station, making sure that people are doing their job. It shouldn't take 6 weeks to clean a station, for example. And sometimes it takes way too long to do things. So let's think about ways in which we can make things happen without costing us, the taxpayers, or the riders a lot of money. So that was really more of a comment than a question, but thank you.
Thanks. Carl?
Thank you for coming. I have 3 comments, and one is kind of a question, I suppose. The first thing I would say would be, looking at the Metro 2025 plans, I think it would be helpful for customers and for the general public to see some sort of prioritization of those 7 pictures and goals. If you put on 100% 8-car trains next year, but the station capacity comes in year 9, you're going to end up with a lot of irate riders crammed on 8-car trains that can't get out of stations. So I think I'm glad both of those pieces are on there, but I do think that some prioritization within the 2025 and where the different pieces will come online within the 10-year window would be very helpful, because it would show people, you know, years 1 through 4 would be focused on getting capacity there, and then years 6 through 9 are bringing the new trains on, that sort of thing. So that would be one suggestion for Metro 2025. I do think, as a larger funding question, I think Metro needs to be realistic. I do think there is a good portion of this that needs to be aspirational. I definitely agree with Alex, but you know, I think a lot of people have heard Metro saying, well, we want to do all these great things, and we need to find some sort of funding source. That's even on one of your bullets, add new sources of predictable funding. I think a lot of people, one, don't know what that means. Does that mean a tax? Does that mean a new compact? Does that mean getting rid of the old compact and amending? You know, you say predictable sources of funding. Very few people understand what that means to them. So I think some sort of amendment and clarification of what that looks like, or what a few options could look like. The last thing I would say would be under, I guess, number goal 4, maybe bullet 3. I'm looking in this, not on the slide thing. Looking at increased efficiency and lower cost. If Metro is expecting $1 billion a year in state of good repair money to maintain the system and adding an additional 50% on top of that, obviously that's a massive increase for management of contracts, grants, financial management. And I think that as taxpayers, Metro needs to address how it's going to make sure that a 50% increase in capital funding every year will be, one, well-managed, two, spent responsibly, and three, there's a high degree of accountability related to that. Because, I mean, when you're 5 years old and then your allowance got doubled and you suddenly didn't know what to do with yourself and then you spent all your money in one go, you know, I think there's a lot of questions about such a large increase in spending on the capital side and how Metro will manage that. And I think a lot of people have a sour taste looking at other regional transit projects and questions about how those have been managed, including those that are on the front page of the Washington Post today related to the Silver Spring Transit Center that is massively overrun. Now, I don't know the details of that project, but as Metro is justifying these plans, I think there needs to be a clear connection in how Metro will be ensuring taxpayer dollars are spent efficiently and justifying that it can handle the pressure of such a massively increased budget and goals that are so large. So, but thank you. I think overall the plan looks great.
Thanks for your comments.
Thanks. Edda Sherry? Could you turn on your mic? There
you go. About expansion down the Route 7 corridor, Fort Belvoir area, is that what's happening there?
Well, and again, it's definitely something, expansion down to Fort Belvoir, something that's in long-term plans. It's certainly an area that we're looking at, both improvements in the Route 1 corridor, bus improvements, there have been plans that have looked at various rail connections too, but at this point, those are in the longer-term plans and not in this 10-year priority list, but certainly things that we continue to study right now. And I think some of the bus improvements that VDOT are looking at could be shorter-term things that they're looking at.
Okay. Thanks. Barbara?
Thank you for the presentation. This one page here ties it together better than anything I've seen. It's there's so much there. It really kind of it helps us understand how it evolved and what the targets are. I want to echo a little bit of what Carl said. I think that it's imperative to plan ahead like this. I think that, you know, I'm trusting that at some point, either now or in the future, there'll be really clear milestones, because I think with the themes that you got from the public, there's probably everybody thinks their theme ought to be in the first year or two of the 10, you know, and so it's good to manage those expectations and share with people what that means. I'll be very curious to see what they are. I have one question, and that is, was there anything in your public outreach that was a recurring theme that you really feel like wasn't something you were able to incorporate into this? It's just some you're smiling, so I'm suspecting there was.
I think we had a combination. I'd say there are two maybe groups of comments we got. We got a lot of comments that were the long-term, big picture, let's think big about planning the next, 100-mile system, and a lot of excitement about the big themes, but probably we got just as many more comments on just fix what we have today, the day-to-day, make sure everything's working in terms of information and things function well. We have, good customer service and all that. So we heard both sides of it. I think we've tried to do a nice balance between shorter term and longer term and lower cost and maybe the big picture capital improvements. So nothing comes to mind, right off the bat. I think some of the longer term big expansion ticket items, realistically, in terms of the time it takes to develop and construct major capital projects, I think there's frustration about how long and how expensive some of these projects are. This is definitely one of those where folks would love to have some of these things today. And so that was something we certainly.
Yeah, and I would disappoint people here if I didn't bring up that I think one of the things people would be excited about having on the early end of the 10, not the late, is because of the hits the Blue Line has taken and are taking over the next several months, and to say, oh boy, there may be another path by 2025 is like reminding them of oh my gosh, we have to wait that long. So that's probably always going to be something you'll hear about. Thank you. James?
First of all, thank you. Thank you for this. I'm a futurist, so I just love looking at this Metro 2040. And I'm looking, because I'm focused on Maryland, this is interesting that you're looking at expanding BWI Marshall to BWI Marshall, and you're expanding to Bowie, the system. And of course to Waldorf. My question is that are there any discussions or communications with Charles County in terms of Waldorf, Bowie, in terms of, well, not just Prince George's County, but Anne Arundel, and BWI Marshall Airport in terms of Howard County, Anne Arundel County? Are you having these discussions now in terms of this Metro 240, this part of it?
Sure, and these are all part of this long-term regional transit plan effort. All of these extensions are ones that have been on the books for many years. In the case of the three you mentioned in Maryland, we certainly have had discussions with MDOT planning staff. I think all three have had independent state studies at one time or another. And so what we basically have done is we've evaluated how different extensions would do in terms of ridership forecast long term. What we haven't done in the regional transit plan yet is come back and said sort of how these things would function in terms of productivity and sort of what might be the appropriate mode. I think when you look at extending the reach of the system, our first thing is we have to address core capacity. That's why we put in our 2025 priorities, addressing the core of the system before we start to expand the reach. But the other thing you see is a lot of the end-of-line stations line up well with HOV facilities that are out there today. And so in the shorter term, looking at ways to perhaps run express bus along a lot of these corridors might be a way to sort of build ridership. But I think when we come back to bring the regional transit plan back to our board, I think we're going to talk about the need for ridership, but also the need for supportive land use in these corridors to support heavier investments in transit. I think for a lot of the region, they say they want a metro extension. Mm-hmm. What they really want is frequent, reliable service is what folks want. And I think the question is, what are the land use densities that will support those types of investments? Anyway, I'd say we're going to continue throughout this year to be kind of developing some of these ideas on the long-term plan stuff. We have a blog, planetmetro.com, where we'll be putting some of this stuff out throughout the year, and I think we're coming back to this group probably later in the year to talk more about some of the long-term stuff.
And I know we're way over time for this. I'm just going to make one quick comment. I think there's a slight contradiction in the presentation in that on the first one of the first bullets is make no small plans. But then at the very end in the capital order of funding, I'm looking at the 2025 number as 500 million. Over 10 years, 500 million, 50 million a year split out amongst the jurisdictions, it's actually not that much money if you think about it. And it seems to me like, you know, as I think Alex was saying, and I quote, you should force us into the future. I think that's a wonderful way of putting it. And I really hope that Metro shoots high, because eventually it's going to be whittled down and it's going to be sort of cost engineered down to a lower figure. And if Metro aims higher in the beginning, that whittled down figure is going to be higher and it's going to have more that Metro can then work with. So just a sort of half political comment there.
We also think it's interesting to look at what other regions around the country are doing. And when you look at very ambitious expansion plans in places like Denver and Salt Lake City, Los Angeles, Houston, places like that, and you look at how this region does in terms of, you know, the, our economy, certainly, you know, we have to put the investment in terms of where we want to go as a region. Thanks.
Can I ask a quick clarification, Ben?
You may.
Question for Tom. It's 500 million a year, 500 million annually for 10 years to get to Metro 25, right?
It was over 12, actually. It was a $6 billion.
Gotcha.
Oh.
So not 50 million a year, 500 million a year times 12.
Okay, that's a little different. Excellent clarification. Thank you for that. Okay, so actually, yes, this is a big plan. much bigger than I thought. Okay, anyway, so we're about 25 minutes over time, and I want to respect our next presenter's time here as well. We do have a motion on the floor that we do have to deal with, and that motion is to offer RAC endorsement for Momentum. So is there any debate on this motion?
Could you remind me who moved and seconded that?
That's a good question. Is someone going to formally, I don't think we can have a guest formally move that. Is someone going to formally move that we adopt this proposal?
I'll move that.
Okay. Is there a second?
I second.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks to John for keeping us honest. Any debate on this? Yes, Fred.
If there are some additional, you know, if you think of some additional ways to help us communicate the plan, be happy to get those as well.
Okay. Carol?
Yes, I agree with all the people who spoke on this side that I have issues with the way it's written and with some of the words. And one could say, well, this is a high-level view. But I think the words that are used and the order in which they're used are very significant. So while I have no problems with the grand plan, I have issues with the specific wording.
Thank you, Patrick.
So a point of clarification. I mean, are we able to, you know, is it tonight or never on this vote? Or are we able, given the fact that this is a draft, you know, you've mentioned that a couple times. I mean, are you looking for sign off on this language, which I think is what my colleagues are saying, or are you looking for sign off on kind of the general?
I believe it is going before the board at some point in the relatively near future. Will there be another RAC meeting between now and then, I guess, is the question.
I think what we really are getting is endorsement of priorities expressed in this last slide in terms of the key themes for the 2025 priorities and the framework. Some of the wordsmith thing is still happening, and so I think, you know, I'll take back to the
I get that. My concern is that if we are to vote on something that it's in draft form right now, we're essentially affixing our name to something that may change either insignificantly or significantly between now and the board meeting or between now and it's finalized. And that's
I just have a little bit of heartburn about that aspect of it.
Okay. Fred?
So just the slide that's up there. So what really bothers me the most, and the reason I actually am on the rack, is the word customer is not a central focus through the metro, it seems. The word is not on that slide. I mean, you can't say we're customer-focused and never use the word. And I mean, I get how all these things are important to customers, but if customer first, it has to be like job one, to make the rider, to be focused on the rider's experience. This is not about the metro being efficient for the metro. It's about getting us around.
Yeah. And clearly, that's what goal two is all about, and you're right. You should emphasize that more.
Any other debate on the motion? Or any motions on the motion, for that matter?
Can the motion be read?
Yes. So we are endorsing the high level aspects, or that I guess we should say that we're endorsing the goals of this plan. Is that an adequate statement?
I think we want to have I'm going to say endorsement of the strategic priorities in the momentum plan.
Okay.
I want to differentiate from the goals, which are the four goals that the board adopted. I think are pretty much set because the board adopted those. But we're really after endorsement of the momentum.
So you're looking at the last slide, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're endorsing the concepts on the last slide. Is that specific enough for what you're looking for?
But I think recognizing that this is a summary of two main components, which I think when we say endorsement of momentum, we're saying is the strategic framework, which is where we took the four goals and we break them into those strategies that I walked through, as well as the list of 2025 priorities. Those are the two main components that we're looking for endorsement of. This is really just a summary of those two pieces.
Okay. So it's actually the strategies that you're listing under the goals. That's what you're looking for the endorsement of.
Right, as well as the 2025 priorities.
And the 2025 priorities. Okay. Any further debate? Any motions? Help me out here.
Call the question.
Right. Thank you. Somebody has to call the question. I'll just say, I as the chair cannot call the question. I'm powerless there, so somebody's got to help me out. Thank you very much. Is there a second?
Further question, we could just go to a direct vote without calling the question and going
to a vote. According to the procedures, is anybody going to second the motion to call the question? Thank you. All right, so now we're going to vote on whether to end debate on this question. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, now we're going to move straight to a vote on the actual question, which is to endorse the strategies here under the goals and the 2025 priorities. All in favor, please raise your hands. All opposed? Any abstainers? Okay, the motion passes. You have your endorsement. Thank you very much. Okay. right. You do have to come back, yes.
I'd like to also suggest that those of us who have specific language changes or things like that, can we send them to
yes.
John through?
Okay. Yes. Okay. And now, with many apologies, we'll bring Lynn Bowersox here just at about the time where she was supposed to end her presentation. We'll get her to start it. We do have some fat in the schedule, though, which we can go through. So we're actually not too badly off topic here. But welcome.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here with all of you. It's my favorite subject, which is safety and communicating about safety to the customers. There's no presentation tonight because I hope to talk just a little and then do a lot of listening to all of you. This is a subject that's been an ongoing discussion and dialogue with some of the RAC members, Carol, Ben, Barbara, Carl, a number of us have been talking about it for some time. So I wanted to let you know the path that we're taking and then get your input into some of the critical pieces of communications that we're going to be developing. We will be approaching Metro's board next week with the first part of our customer safety program, and I say there are two parts because they're slightly different but parallel paths. On the first path, we're talking about customer safety in terms of the most common injuries that take place on our system, be it bus or rail. For three consecutive years, we've had reductions in customer injuries each year. Last year, we had about 587 customer injuries. Most of these are slips, trips, and falls. You can imagine it, right? Running for the train, standing too close to the edge, running up and down escalators, running for a bus, trying to hold open a rail car door, having your arm caught. These are the kinds of common things that happen on a daily basis to our customers that we'd like to try to prevent. We're going to be talking with the board about a multimedia campaign that creates a high-level awareness about those conditions, about the consequences to them for customers, and do what our focus groups of customers told us to do, which was to try to jar them out of their zone. Our customers tell us that when they're commuting every single day, it's habitual, they take the same path, they get into a zone, and they're not really focused on all the risks around them. So they've asked us to come back and communicate about that. That's one thing that we're going to be trying to do. It's in support of the general manager's target goal this year, reducing injuries by 5%. And we will share that campaign with you. We will appreciate your comments on it. But that is going to be getting out into the system and out to the media in the next couple of weeks. The second path in this program, which is in its still in its infancy, is around emergency preparedness for customers. And that is a safety area where, as you know, we have been working to try to improve from both the customer information side and our own training and protocol side. And internally, we've done a lot of work on this. We've taken a lot of what the RAC told us at the incident communications panel last fall, and we started to operationalize that. And that's where I've really come tonight to hear your concerns, your input, and to get guidance from you on how we proceed. The first step that you're going to see us take, and we learned this in January after the Green Line incident, one of the lessons learned, if you're familiar with the investigation report that we made public. For many people, the fear of being stuck on a train, particularly in a tunnel environment, is so great that they risk their lives by self-evacuating. And we need to address that very quickly. So one of the things you're going to see us do, because if you ride our trains, you know that the only emergency instructions really on that train come in a clear panel, poster size instruction near the door, because not unlike planes, we don't have the seat back, right, where you can get the emergency card. And unlike on an Amtrak train, we don't have that facility. So we have this poster up, and it has all kinds of graphics and instructions and maps. And if you were really stuck in a train in the dark in an emergency, I guarantee you wouldn't stop to read all of that. So we don't think it's a highly effective form of communication. So the first thing we're going to do is we found some vinyl material that's glow in the dark, and we've made a sign that has very few words on it that basically says, stay on the train unless otherwise instructed by the operator, unless certain conditions exist, okay? Because the first communication we want to have with our rail riders is the safest place for you when you're out on the railroad in third rail territory is on board a train, unless there's an extreme set of circumstances. Then we want to go back and redesign that instruction poster for how to safely evacuate. And what I'm prepared to do there is to get the experts to do the sort of basic what we have to do. And I'd like to bring that to the RAC to take a look at that. Or we could, as Ben suggested, to go out, or Barbara, I'm sorry, I can't remember who, to go out into the field to see how we're doing this work, to see it on a real rail car, and for you all to provide us with some guidance around, do you think that this reinstruction will work for people? And then the third piece of this, and this is where I need the greatest amount of help, is developing a piece of information for customers, a brochure, it could be a video, it can take whatever form you think, so that in advance of any emergency ever happening, they've had an opportunity to think about and prepare themselves for an emergency, so that in advance of being stuck on a train or on a bus in bad weather, they've thought about alternate travel, about what is safe and what is unsafe. And they've had an opportunity to review that instruction so that the first time they're hearing about what to do is not in an emergency, because we all know that that's not the time to really be doing a lot of learning. And so these pieces will go hand in glove with the training and protocols and the changes that WMATA is making to improve its own response in an emergency. But this is where the rider's view, the rider's opinions, the rider's experience on the system can really shape the communications that we're going to do next. So with that, I'd actually just like to open it for discussion, if that's acceptable to the chair, and listen to you about what you think the concerns are of riders, what you think are the most important things we should be communicating that aren't getting through today, and to put yourself in the shoes, and maybe some of you have had this experience, if you're stuck on a train or you're stuck on a bus, what is it that you hope that you would have known before that happens that would be useful for us to present?
All right. We have our marching orders. This time I'm going to go the other way around here. So we'll just we'll start with James.
None.
All right. Barbara?
Put on.
Yeah, so the two prongs of the discussion there are reduction of injuries and preparedness for emergencies. So Lynn is looking for some feedback on for how to improve both of those things, especially in emergency situations.
I'd probably do better with a little thought. But the first thing that occurred to me when you were talking about the slips and falls and trips is that, you know, the customers are doing it to themselves, which is a lot true. But I think it would be helpful to also talk about what Metro's doing to help that. You know, for instance, okay, customers catch themselves indoors. I think some customers will say that there are times when they stop, they get the little sound that the doors are closing, and there are tons of people still out on the platform. And I see that at least every week. I don't know if I see it every day. But I think some of the ideas you talked about are ones that, you know, we can provide a lot of input on. Probably from scratch it's hard, but we can probably provide response to something that's drafted for us. Be happy to do that. And I have done some emergency evacuation things for buildings that followed September 11th. And so I have some ideas of my own, whether, you know, even things like laminated wallet cards that some people might actually stick in their wallet, stick it in their little bag or wallet that has their Metro card, and might keep it for an emergency. Maybe enough people would do it that there'd be one on several trains.
And so in that instance, the laminated card would have what kind of information?
The basic stuff you want people to know.
Okay.
You know, the stuff that you were putting in, what was it? Glow in the dark, the glow in the dark stuff, you know, maybe something very simple, things to remember, you know, you're safest. I don't know. You probably don't need to have a laminated card that says you're safer staying on the train. But if there are a few,
you might.
But that's, if there are steps that people should take, things that they should know about, you know, I think it's the kind of thing that's on the wall now. They could carry it with them. They could read it when they get bored, when they can't get cell service. And that's one idea that I've seen work.
I neglected once again to look to the public for our first comments. Any public comments? You have to yell louder, by the way.
Well, Ben, thank you for your recognition again. Ms. Bowersock, specifically on the issue of self-evacuation, and I'm sure you're well aware of this, one of the themes that came out very clearly from not just the Green Line incident, but especially the Green Line incident, also the ones before that on the Orange Line, and, well, I forget how many meltdowns there have been in the past few years, but riders self-evacuate because they've lost faith in the system. very simply, they self-evacuate because they genuinely, deeply believe that help is not arriving in any reasonable period of time. And, you know, a glow-in-the-dark sign that says, you know, you're safer on the train, that doesn't do very much. Now, you know, a customer charter, some kind of written commitment that says, if there's an incident, here are time frames we will adhere to. You know, we guarantee that. You know, if you're on a train that's stalled underground, we will either get it moving or evacuate you within X amount of time. And making that very clear, and that doesn't have to be glow in the dark. I mean, just get that out to people before there's an incident and adhere to it. Because otherwise, you're going to have people self-evacuating. Now, hopefully, some of them will be a little bit savvy, and they will, you know, not trip over the third rail and kill themselves. But no, it's true. I mean, there eventually there will be an incident. There will be another meltdown like we had on the Green Line, and it will turn into a real disaster. I mean, fortunately, the Green Line meltdown was not all that bad. Everyone, I mean, I don't think there were actually any injuries incurred in the evacuation, but it's only a matter of time. If people have lost faith in the ability of WMATA to manage an emergency, it's only a matter of time before they do take things into their own hands, and there is a serious incident that actually results in an injury not due to the original cause, but due to the self-evacuation. And threatening people with arrest, which is what happened at, I think, the last board meeting, doesn't really help either. You know, people, you need to rebuild that trust first. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from the public? All right, seeing none. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
You got to be fast. You got to push it until the thing turns red, yeah.
Okay, great. So I'd like to just echo what Kurt said a little bit. I think the glow-in-the-dark signs are a good idea and a step in the right direction and certainly helpful. But I think in a situation like that where riders are stuck underground in the dark, the most important thing is information. And I think that has to come from the conductor. And I think any announcements in that kind of situation do much more than any glow-in-the-dark sign possibly could do at that moment. So I think that should be a priority, communicating to the riders what's happening. I don't know what the protocols call for, but if you know, the train operator has to leave the front of the train to inspect something, they should let the riders know that's the case, so they may not be hearing announcements for a stretch of time. But just clear communication during incidents is the most important thing to keep riders informed and ultimately safe. Yeah, I think that's all I have to say. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Anyone else from the public want to comment? Okay, seeing none.
Okay, I have a couple of areas, and I agree with this gentleman over here. It really is imperative that you can communicate any, you know, emergency, and that imperative comes that all intercoms actually have to work on the trains. I just learned for the first time this week, if you hit the call button more than three, you cancel out the, you know, it getting to the operator in the train, so something happens. And this is something that should be checked regularly. I don't think it should be an issue where, oh, we had 70% of the intercoms working. That doesn't work for me. So that's something that should be updated. And also, how closely do we actually work with Destination DC, our tourist bureau? You know, our biggest thing is that the tourists don't know. And I know when people are coming to D.C., they ask for information from D.C. destination, and they send packages all across the country. Does Metro have a package of safety do's and don'ts? I know Destination D.C. sends out the map of the Metro, but they don't really have a card that the last time I checked that says, you know, stand to the right, some basic stuff that we know here, that the doors do not open if you stick your arm in there. And this is like, you know, tourism is a major economic thing here in D.C., and so you should really work closely with them. Also understand that besides sending information about D.C. all over the country, they also have evacuation plans that in case a natural disaster or something happens, that they send to all the hotels, because this is where, you know, tourists, and they need to know a safe way to get out the city. So actually work closely with them, have them include in their tourist packages that they send all across the country, safety tips, do and don't. I think that will help, and it'll help especially around now. I've seen so many people get stuck in the sliding doors right now because the cherry blossoms that, and we don't get those announcements. Seem like those should be more so. I've heard the steps stand to the right, but I haven't heard too many, the doors don't open. So you have a good group right there at Destination DC. Work closely with them because they're sending out that information all the time. Thank you.
Thanks. Carl?
Thanks for coming, Lynn. I think, first, I don't think I'd be speaking out of hand if I volunteered the safety, our new safety and security subcommittee to provide you with a more formal response that outlines the specific things, and we can follow up and give you very specific answers in addition to our comments tonight. I think a couple pieces I would highlight, I do think more broadly some sort of compact with riders is a good idea from a larger customer perspective, and that can address some of these issues related to how Metro approaches riders during emergencies and afterwards. I think going further than Kurt on losing faith with people losing faith in the system, I do think that there needs to be some way for people to know what to do if no information is coming. I think I speak for all of us when we say bad information is better than no information, and correct information is the best of all, even if it's bad. And I think that as a general policy, if WMATA adopts and continues its efforts to be truthful with riders up front about the length of the delay, the steps being taken to remedy it, that's helpful. But if that information isn't coming, I think riders need to know another source, because without another source, and I recognize there might not be another source in the middle of a tunnel where there's no cell service and all you have is a call box. But I do think that there needs to be some sort of discussion of if the person in the front of the cab is not answering and the train is dark and you've been waiting for a set amount of time, what do you do? I mean, the assumption is, yes, emergency responders are coming, but it would be nice if we didn't have to make that assumption. So I think something to address what happens if there is no information would be helpful. I do think tying time to it, I think, would be helpful in anything that's occurring. I forget who mentioned around the table related to, you know, if an operator has to leave the front of the cab, making sure everyone knows, that sort of thing. But I do think that I have not self-evacuated. I hope to never self-evacuate or be in a system self-evacuate. I don't think anyone here around the table or right in the system wants to. But after the Green Line incident, I think a lot of riders said to themselves, well, would I have done that? And I've wrestled with that myself on if stuck under the tunnel, would I have been in the group of riders who got out and took a hike or not? And without information, a lot more people are going to choose taking a hike. So if there's not a way for live communication through the cars, then we need to have some other provision. I don't know what that looks like yet, but we will give some more thought to the broader questions and can get back to you.
I appreciate you struggling with it and with us and the safety subcommittee suggestion, which had also come from the chair. We'd be happy to bring some drafts forward for consideration. I, you know, would point to this fact, and this is what stumps me. In the Green Line situation, there were two trains, and I was part of the investigating team. In one instance, the operator was new, and the communication was not what it should have been. In the other instance, there was a veteran operator who did an extraordinary job communicating. People self-evacuated from both trains in a matter of minutes, okay? And the reason I point that out isn't to blame the passenger. It is to say that our job, the job we have ahead of us, the challenge before us is enormous. How do we give that level of comfort and assurance to customers in minutes after they have concluded that they're in an emergency situation,
right,
so that they make good choices and they make good decisions and they follow safety direction? I think that advanced communications is key. because emergencies are emergencies, the reason that there are variables beyond everyone's control. And so we can't always rely on all of the systems to work as intended. And that's really right. Your point about, you know, how do we deal with that? And we're all struggling together on that. There's a lot of good information out there, good research on how other countries have done it who live with greater risk of terrorism on their system. And Fire Service has some very good information on this. And we're sorting through that, and we'll bring that forward to the subcommittee. And we think there's some good learning there from what others have done. But it is a big challenge, and I respect the point.
In one place that might be worth expanding the reach would be platforms, where there is almost no emergency information right now. And much to our delight, riders spend a lot of time waiting on them and a lot of time wishing they had cell service so they could read their phone, and then they don't. So I think that could be one place where short, succinct messages about how to handle an incident, whether in a train or in a station, could be useful. Just a thought.
Alex?
Yeah, thank you for coming in. This is very informative. I've got so many rambling thoughts about this issue, but I think that at the core to me, what you just said is kind of most important. We need to sort of come together to think about how we can make this work in the future. One thing that I thought about a lot when we had the two meltdowns that we've had in the past year or so is I wouldn't even have thought to do this before it happened. And I think that probably what happened in the Green Line evacuation to some extent, or in the Red Line, the second one, was that people were all of a sudden like, oh my God, yeah, we can just self-evacuate. Let's get out of here because Metro's a disaster and who knows when people will get here. And I mean, maybe you were on the investigative team, but I read a lot of accounts where people were waiting for over an hour to evacuate off that train, not minutes. And that's understandable, in my view. I mean, if you're waiting for an hour, this is not about informing the customers better. It's not about telling them, you know, don't get off the train. Most of us would be like, duh, I'm not going to get off the train. That's dangerous. There's signs everywhere that tells me I'm going to die if I do it. But if you're there for an hour and nobody's coming and Metro's let you down in the past, I can understand why people did it. And I think that's the crux of the issue to me. So I think really, you know, maybe do more to inform the riders. Improving the telecommunication system on the train, I think, is totally true. A lot of people have said it. Fix the intercom so the drivers, you can hear the driver on every single car 100% of the time. That's not a marketing thing, but that's like, if you're talking about safety, that's it. I mean, that's, everybody knows simple things like don't run on the platform, don't get off the train. But it's because we've got this disastrous lack of trust going on that people are even considering doing things like this. And they hear that it's happened before. So anyway, this is my two cents, I guess. But.
Thanks. Ready?
I've agreed with some of your comments, but I want to ask you, have you thought about having an emergency drill in place, including those riders who are hearing impaired, who are deaf, and who cannot understand speech? Do we have an emergency drill? Do we have an emergency procedure in place in case of fire, in case of storm, in case of flood, in case of earthquake? We need to have emergency procedure in place so we know what to do, how to communicate with the public riders.
The hard thing for us is, and the point was made earlier, we have so many visitors to the system, and how do we include everybody in drills and the 1.2 million a day? But I think that, you know, what we can do better is offer instruction that's available to everybody and offer information. And one of the ways to do that might be videos, which, you know, we could put on our WMATA.com website. It would be available for anybody coming into town, for anybody who regularly rides the system. And obviously, we do videos in various languages, and we can do the subtext, et cetera, so that it's accessible for everybody.
Well, you need to make sure of training that you can say we.
The new 7000 series trains, I think, will have that capability, but those rail cars are a little bit down the road, so.
Hi, thanks for being here. I just wanted to comment on the everyday injuries that you're having. I'm glad to see that they're going down. But I think a lot of people run for the train, but they don't trust when the next one's coming. Especially if you're Blue Line, if you know the next train isn't going to be for another 12 minutes and you see one on the platform, you're going to do whatever you can to get on that train that's already there. So that's another bit of the trust for Metro. You see a train there, you're going to knock over whoever you can to get on it. You don't realize how hard those doors are or the fact that they don't bounce back until it hits you. And so that might be another thing for especially our tourists who don't know, you know, these kinds of things that the everyday rider would know. Also, you know, during this time, I still see a lot of our tourists with the children, still letting them get too close to the edge of the platform, still letting them ride up and down the train, sitting down on the escalator, sitting down where, you know, we've had trouble with the fingers getting caught and that kind of thing. So maybe it would be good to have just little pamphlets at the hotels that may keep some of these tourists that they can pick up while they grab the other, you know, maps and things they get. Maybe they could get some kind of Metro safety flyer or something, especially for the ones with the kids, because I'm not sure they understand just how dangerous, you know, the system could be for, you know, folks who don't ride it every day.
Yeah, I think that's complimentary to your point. And, and as you pointed out, we do deliver information to visitors through them, but I don't think we've done safety for a little while. So that's
thanks. Brett?
So I made a long list. I'll read it. So the one thing I think Metro could do is, like, learn to communicate. I think there's an assumption you guys know how to, that you know how to communicate, and, in fact, that's something that I think needs to be learned. You need to take advantage of, you have, like, a lot of employees who are in front of customers every day, all the train operators, all the bus operators. All these guys need to get some training on how to communicate messages. All of us have heard the lectures from the train operator about the doors, and everybody just kind of tunes it out. And by the way, there is a few operators who are actually quite entertaining to listen to, and you need to find out where they are and give them big rewards, because some of them are very funny, and some of them, you know, like, get their message across in a really humorous but good way, which brings me to my next point. So any messages you have, they need to be layered, episodic, and they need to be, like, cool and interesting. Please, you know, no more. So there's the endless message now that comes on from the chief of the Metro Police telling about some phone numbers that nobody can remember. It's not written down anywhere, and we're supposed to call when we have a problem. You know, these are the kind of things that are not helpful. But the train operators with a little training, I think, could really do a lot after we fix the amplification systems. When I say layered, you got to have more than one way you do things. Think about outside the box. Everybody who goes on the Metro has people handing them stuff out all the time. Can't go to a station hardly without newspapers, pamphlets, everything. And all that stuff ends up in the trash can at the end of the escalator. Think about other things. Print on the Metro card. Print T-shirts with the message. Give them out. They're cheap. You could have, like, contests for among people for cool designs. That's the other thing, is it needs to be something interesting that someone will pay attention to. It's colorful, has good design, interesting. Most of the Metro riders are kind of, like, not my age, way younger, and are not interested in kind of the boring ways we communicate sometimes. Multiple languages. There's probably like 100 languages spoken in D.C. You know, get them all. Oh, yeah. And then just as a kind of aside, over at COG, they have a campaign to try to keep people from walking in front of cars in the street, pedestrian safety, and they have a really good consultant right now who's got some very cool ideas. You might want to just go check with them and see if you can get linked up to them. And then the last thing is, whatever you do, make sure you practice and exercise whatever systems stuff you have in place, because the main reason things fail is because you had never practiced.
All right. Thank you. Karen?
Thank you. I spent a contest idea. I know that people my age, well, I'll just speak for myself, I don't know what's cool. I'm not a good focus group on cool. I say this to my team all the time. If you're waiting for me to tell you it's hip, it's probably not. So I like the idea. It's also a great way to engage people in the conversation so they're thinking about safety even while they're designing that T-shirt. Thanks.
I just have a few other suggestions. Has Metro considered having quarterly safety outreach campaigns, just going out and speaking to the riders, passing information out to the riders? I think that's a good, useful way to get information on what you need to do during an emergency. And I also think there needs to be more information on the platform. I believe other people have said that today as well. And maybe consider a pre-recorded message when there's an emergency, particularly on the trains as well. And maybe something on your website. It could be a webinar, how to stay safe when you're on the bus or the train. And I believe that's all I have, but I just think Metro needs to be a little more proactive when it comes to emergency preparedness.
Thank you.
Patrick? Thank you for your thoughts on this. There are a couple things that a couple other folks have mentioned that I wanted to piggyback on. You know, Fred mentioned that a lot of the audio gets tuned out by the riders. You know, your idea of signs is a good one. I am worried that, you know, the joke has always been that people don't read signs. You know, if they're in the zone, if they're going to work, if they're getting on the train, stopping and reading a sign is not something that's on their radar screen. I love the idea of the video. I like the idea of the audio, and as Deborah pointed out, the audio provides a challenge for people who are hearing impaired. But in and of themselves, these things are just tools. If you put the sign up and the sign doesn't work, it's kind of like saying that this screwdriver I got doesn't work. Well, unless you turn it, unless you surround it with context, unless you provide it with the things that you need to bolster it with, nothing's going to work. No viral video, no glow-in-the-dark sign. What needs to happen here is you need to surround these individual communications tools with the context. If it is a separate video for tourists and a separate video for commuters that say, hey, look, tourists, stand to the right, walk to the left. You know, these are the little tips and tricks that are going to help you in and out of the system. For commuters, you do something different. You know, the same tool is not necessarily going to work for both groups. You know, one of the things that I've seen in a lot of sporting venues over the last couple of years is the advent of texting. You know, texting for stadium incidents, if there's safety issues, that sort of thing. You can text a code to your specific, I think it's a 6-digit code, something like that, and let people at the stadium know, okay, there's a fight going on in section blank, blank, blank. You could do the same thing with stations. That type of thing, that's a little bit easier to remember than a 10-digit phone number over a loudspeaker. But like I said, you know, any of these things, as standalones, they're just tools. And so you really got to surround them with resources, with time, with effort, with money, to really make sure that they stick.
Thanks. I take those points, and it's like the layering comment. You do have to have a multimedia approach. And I think recognizing the differences in the audience is a really good point. What works for commuters is not going to be the same as visitors, so we do need to have a different approach there.
One more thing, and if I may, I apologize, and we'll run along. You know, one thing that the sign lacks is a personal voice. You know, the points that we make about operators getting on the loudspeaker, regardless of what that operator's saying, you get the idea that there's a person on the other end that's going through the same things that you're going through. The sign doesn't give that. It doesn't let people know, hey, you know, I know you freaked out. The safest place for you is on the train. You know, videos, audio, you almost convey that personal connection, and that's a real benefit to those media. And so, I would just say that the more you can do with that, the better.
Other Patrick.
Yeah, good. It's too many Patricks, and we all sit together. Great planning. So just to piggyback on a couple of comments that I've heard here, you have a very large disabled community who you need to communicate differently than perhaps with other people. You've got different challenges, people in wheelchairs, blind people, hearing impaired, and all types of disabilities. So rather than go through the litany here, which my committee has done and talked about in the past, I would suggest you go talk to Christian Kent. Maybe he might have, he can probably bring up to speed with the things that my committee talks about with accessibility, disability access, that sort of thing. We did have a presentation by the Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind at our last meeting. They were talking about maps that they're going to put together that discuss how to get in and out of a system. It might be good to see if you want to piggyback on something like that, another way to get the message out. But I would say that we talked to the board at a quarterly meeting last month, and safety was one of the paramount things we talked about. So rather than go through everything that we do that we talked about in that meeting, I would say maybe discuss our thoughts, what we've done, with Christian, who can give you a good summary, and I think incorporate some of that before you go to the board.
Thanks, I will.
Sure.
Carol?
Thanks for the. That's okay. Thank you. One of the things that occurs to me, and there's a sort of a kind of a combination emerging here about momentum presentation, about wanting people to invest and trust in the system, and it occurred to me, I don't know if it makes sense or not, but maybe we need to train a volunteer cadre of people who would serve, you know, like in a lot of agencies or a lot of organizations, they have like a volunteer occupant emergency people who are trained to help during emergencies. Maybe Metro ought to put out a call to do that. The other thing that I think needs to happen is that people, you need to take the message where people are. I think we talked about that a little bit at the, Alvin Nichols talked about that a little bit at the leadership meeting, where we need to go where people already are gathered, churches, mosques, synagogues, community centers, health centers, and take that message. And then I didn't end up going to the second inauguration, but I was very interested in the tool that I don't think was available before, which was the Plan Your Trip, and I could go online and plan my trip. So I think one of the focuses should be that you tell people that you ought to have at least two ways of getting home other than the usual way. So because in some instances you can perhaps minimize an emergency by not going into the system, or at least when you get out, not having it happen. And finally, at the risk of being called a shill for Mamata, my understanding, and I was there at the meeting when you did the Green Line incident report, my impression is that the delay was mainly caused by the fact that you were within, 10 or 15 minutes from restoring power to the line, and it was the self-evacuation that extended the situation. So.
Thank you, and I appreciate the comment, especially about planning the alternate route home. I've noticed Dr. Gridlock, in some of his recent columns, has urged his readers to do that, and I think that's a very helpful and constructive idea for everybody who writes.
Okay, we're a little over time. I'm going to do just a couple last comments here. First of all, on the signs, the evacuation sign, or the signs in the cars, the visual information on that is all about self-evacuation. So when I look at the sign, what do I think about? I think about self-evacuation. Even if there's something that says don't self-evacuate, the pictures say evacuate. Metro, and I've said this many times in the RAC, it needs a memorable emergency phone number. I'll give it to you right now, 1-800-GO-METRO, very easy. So, you know, they keep saying that on the platform, you know, here's the number. I still don't remember it, and I've been riding Metro all forms for years. The other thing I would say is, in terms of the slips and falls, riders are always going to push the boundaries in terms of trying to get to their train, especially on these places where the headways are a little longer. The further outside of the actual train you push the information about when the next one's coming, the fewer slips and falls you're going to see. Because if it's on the LCD screen Not that it says on time, because that means nothing to me as a rider, but if you say next red line train in 10 minutes, that says I have plenty of time. If it says 30 seconds from now, that means, oh, I'm not going to make that next train. It's going to pace me in a way that I don't, you know, that will eliminate some of those things. But if you wait until I'm actually on the platform looking at the passenger information display that I may or may not be able to see because there's only one of them, then I'm going to have to hurry. And in some, especially the transfer stations, I often hear a train coming, but I can't tell which one it is sometimes if it's on the lower platform. So I'm going to rush down there in the hopes that that's my train, but I can't tell from looking at the front. So if I'm entering the system and I see that that's not my train, then I'm going to take a longer period of time to get down there. So anyway, thank you so much for coming. We really appreciate it. Yeah, and I hope that you'll be, again, engaged with the security subcommittee, and we're going to be following up. If anybody has any other suggestions that they thought of later, please send them to Carol, who is our designated action officer here. And you got some of this as well? Oh, you were, I'm sorry, yes. Barbara, then, our designated action officer. No, the action list, yes. Again, thank you very much. Okay, we're running out of time, but I think we can actually do it. So very quickly, moving on, one of the things that the leadership team has come up with is one of the goals of the leadership team is to foster greater communication between us and the riding public in a sort of unfiltered format. So one of the things that we resolved to do at the beginning of the year is to have three listening sessions over the year. One in each jurisdiction, where we sort of make ourselves available to riders. And we decided after some rock, paper, scissors, a small cage match, that the first one of these would be in Virginia, and in particular in the area of Virginia that's affected by cuts to the blue line, that we would go there and listen to riders first. They would do the second one in Maryland, and then the third one would be in D.C. later on. So. You have before you agenda item number 7 there, which is sort of deep in the packet, which is the proposal. We do have a draft location now, and John, could you just remind me of the name of the place again?
Sure. I guess this is on. We're tentatively looking, and I say tentatively just because I need to make sure that all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed. We're tentatively looking at the Charles Houston Recreation Center in Alexandria. It's about 3 or 4 blocks from the Braddock Road Metro. There's bus service between the metro that stops, you know, a block away from the rec center if you don't want to walk it. And that's what I know. And a tentative date, just continuing with the theme of Wednesdays equal rack, is the only unused Wednesday we have for April the 24th. But I hope to get confirmation on the rec center within the next day or two. If not, then I will scramble to find a place so that, you know, we'll be able to do outreach beginning next week.
Sure. We talked a lot of leadership team about the format of this, sort of the come up to the mic and talk versus focus group model. We tended to go more with the focus group model just because, you know, judging by past attendance at these kinds of events, we probably are not going to have a gigantic group of people. So we thought that breaking it up into smaller groups would provide some more productive feedback and get more input that way. We're going to have the Virginia members of the RAC do sort of lead this first session, then Maryland in the second one, DC in the third one, to get the members of the RAC in their jurisdictions and being sort of visible in their jurisdictions as well. Publicity, as John mentioned, we're going to put it on the WMATA website. We've got other plans and sort of press releases and things like that, and you can see that all in the proposal here. So with that, Carol, would you do the honors?
Yes. I move that we establish 3 listening sessions as been stated.
Okay. All right. Seconded. Any debate? Or motions.
I'd just like to say this is a great idea. We should have done it years ago, and I was on the rack years ago, so I, myself and Carol and a few of the others who have been around share partial blame on that, but this is a great step, and apologies in advance to John, who will soon have no more free nights.
No, only three in a year, that's not bad. At $50 million a year, anyway. Any further debate or discussion? Or motions? Hint, hint.
Motion to close debate.
All right, thank you very much, and seconded. Okay, all in favor of closing debate on this motion, please say aye. All opposed? Abstain? Thank you very much. All right, we're going to move directly to a vote on the motion. Everybody's clear on what we're voting on here? Okay. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? All right, the motion passes. Record time. All right, on to announcements. I will do just a quick summary of our quarterly meeting with the board leadership, which happened this last Thursday. Seems like ages ago. I think it was a very productive meeting. We brought pretty much all of the topics for discussion, but we had a very good discussion with them, I would say. The first thing we talked about was sort of the role of the RAC in the WMATA decision-making process. One thing that we brought up was that we would like the RAC to be involved earlier on in that process, that a lot of what we see is things that sort of come to the RAC as a fait accompli, as something that's here for sort of submission to the RAC after the fact, sometimes after it's been proposed to the board, sometimes after it's been seen by the press. So we sort of pitched to them that, you know, we have this new committee system now, so we're looking to get involved earlier on in the process when things are more of a draft and less of a final product. And I think both the staff was there and also the board were pretty supportive of that, and I think we saw quite a lot of willingness to do that going forward. And we actually talked about several specific items that were on the board agenda and also on the staff agenda that will be coming to the committees and then also to the full RAC later on. And I sent around to the committee chairs a list of some of those items that we're expected to see in the near future. We talked about a lot of different things. We talked about just communication between us and the board, between board and riders. We talked about the sort of situation, the organizational situation of the RAC and what is expected of us when incidents happen, how we are sort of on the hook to respond in a certain way and that we need to be involved a little more in that process. We talked about moving forward with the incident communications panel and that the ball is sort of in our court on that, so we need the Safety and Security Committee to sort of do its work and go through the process there. We raised also the coming of the cuts to the Blue Line and the potential sort of public relations impact of that on Metro and what might be done for riders in the Blue Line, and that's something that maybe we're going to be taking up a little bit more. Anything else that I'm missing? There? Okay. Any questions on that? Any questions or thoughts? And obviously, you know, we're going to be holding these once a quarter, so if anybody has anything that they'd like us to raise with the board, please let me know, either just in person after the meeting or, you know, by email, whenever you like. We're more than happy to raise those questions as they come up. So the committees, we're starting the committee meetings this month. So next Wednesday we have, let's see, safety and security from 6 to 7:30, followed by budget and finance 7:30 to 8:30. Both of those will be here at Metro headquarters. Are they going to be in this room, John? Or are they going to be in the one across the hall? Or somewhere else?
Here.
It
needs to still confirm, given that the budget is going to be passed the day after.
Okay.
Need to talk to you about the budget.
Okay. And then on the third Wednesday of the month, we've got the Operations and Communications Committee, which will be meeting here 7:30 or 6:30 to 7:30. Any comments from the committee chairs on their meetings? In future meetings, we'll have little, you know, committee reports and stuff like that, but obviously they haven't met yet, so we're not going to ask for those now. Please do.
Has anyone thought about some of these committees that have, like, phone lines, so some people can do something that's far away, we don't have to take so far?
That's a good question. I think...
talked about it even within the customer service, communications, et cetera. We didn't talk about it as a primary mode, but as certainly preferable to having people not be there. You know, that.
That's a good suggestion.
Be on the line. It can be hard when you have six different people in six different places, but. Right. You know, we have a lot of them too, and you do need, at least we need some support to do that, you know, in terms of phone bridges and stuff that you don't have. Everyone doesn't have in their homes, but it doesn't mean it can't happen.
Hey.
Yep. Agreed.
I'm sorry. Okay. Thanks. I'm sorry. I just want to add that AAC is already starting to do that. So you may want to talk to John. You may want to talk to Christian Lake. Find out what kind of setup we have for streaming our meetings.
Okay. We have, for example, we're streaming this meeting now.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're anywhere with an internet connection, you can be listening to it. We also have a phone over here, and we have an office conference call number, so that 8 up to, I don't know, 8 or 10 people.
Okay. We will work. We'll work on this and definitely send around call-in information. Yeah, sorry, Debbie just, she was.
Also, in the future, you may want to think about having remote video relay interpreting.
Okay.
In case we don't have a physical interpreter, you may want to think about setting up a remote video relay.
Okay. Thanks. Carol?
And just on a related matter, I think this would be very helpful as the committees get started. You can attend virtually almost every Metro committee and, of course, the Metro board meetings. That has really been very helpful if you want to hear what goes on there without having to get out of your pajamas, in my case.
Alex, did you? Yes.
Thank you. That was a more eloquent way of saying it.
Anything else on the committee meetings? Any other announcements? Sir.
I'd like to meet with the Mariners for about 5 minutes after the meeting.
Okay. You've been duly summoned. Any other comments, questions? We have a motion to adjourn? All right. All in favor? Aye. All right. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much. See, only 3 minutes over. That's not bad.